Morning. This call the House Special Committee on Economic Development, Trade, and Tourism to order. In the room, we have Vice Chair Olson, Representative Foster, Representative Tuck, Representative Thompson, and myself, Bob Herron. If you have cell phone on, please turn it to vibrate or turn it off. We do have two bills to consider today. House Bill 119, we heard last week. Ted Leonard of ADA and Mark Davis made a presentation. There were some questions that I read into the record, and those answers are here. So, Ted and Mark, if you could come forward, introduce yourselves, title and affiliation, and if you could, you don't have to read the answers, but maybe you can paraphrase the answers to my four questions.
To the chair, for the record, I am Ted Leonard with Executive Director of ADA.
I'm Mark Davis, Economic Development Officer with ADA.
And Chair, I would ask Mark Davis was the one who wrote the responses for your questions, and we can go over those right now.
Yeah, again, you don't need to read them, just paraphrase them, please.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, this is Mark Davis for the record.
Yeah.
Question one was really, are we looking at investing through an LLC or other legal entity to avoid risk? And that's not, that isn't because of doing high-risk projects. It's really enabled us to do projects that we can't even do. The new legal structures would help with our risk, but it's not the primary objective. The primary objective is to be able to actually invest in a percentage of the project, which the legislature approved last year, an amendment to 4488-172A. And as we worked with that new statute, potential partners came to us and said, we'd love to have you be in a position with us, but we'd like to be in an LLC or a corporation. And we found that legally we didn't have the authority to do so. Now, once you're in that structure, it does limit risk, but it isn't a matter of us wanting to engage in riskier enterprises. It's really a matter of wanting to leverage our funds and to work with the private sector. It's our belief, as set out in the strategic plan, that working with the private sector is a good way to validate the investments. If private capital is interested in the project, then it probably makes sense for ADA to look at it carefully. Number two was what kind of projects would this allow us to do? And so we went down the list to try to give you some examples. For example, Mr. Leonard in his testimony had mentioned the fuel storage potential at the airport. That obviously supports transportation, but you could read the current statutes that allow us to do transportation as transportating natural resources. So as Ms. Leonard testified last week, it isn't a matter of necessarily our definitions may not cover everything, but it's a matter of clarifying it. For example, with regard to roads, we can certainly build roads. We've built the industrial road at the Long Mountain Transportation System to support the Red Dog Mine. But again, that's directly tied to a particular project, which is the port. The question is, could we build an industrial road that was not directly connected to a particular mine, but supported a mine? So that we don't get into fine issues of legal interpretation. We felt it better to just seek clarification from the legislature so that we would be authorized should that opportunity come forward.
Just to interject here, on question number two,
yes.
Of course, your first one is the example of the Anchorage Airport, and so I'd like to bring in our surprise speaker at this time. Ted and Mark, if you could step aside, we have a surprise legislative speaker to talk about a opportunity, missed or otherwise, that would be appropriate at this time. Representative Holmes, you're welcome to come to the mic and introduce yourself for the record. And as you know, we've had a series of legislators that have come in and speak about economic opportunities, missed or otherwise, and I believe you have one to share with us this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Lindsay Holmes, representative from House District 26, and thank you for having me here today. We have a tendency, as you know, in this state to think about economic opportunity. We talk a lot about diversifying our economy, but we have a tendency to look at only the really big things, have a tendency to look if it doesn't have oil, gas, mining, if it's not one of the big things, we have a tendency not to always pay as much attention as we can and ought to. So I'm not here today, Mr. Chairman, to talk to you about a water pipeline. I'm here to talk about something a little more small scale, which is airports. As you know, we're one of the cargo hubs, both in Anchorage, and we have the system with Fairbanks to back it up, the Anchorage and Fairbanks system. And we have an economic opportunity that I'm afraid we're missing the boat on, which is that in 2003, Congress passed a law saying that as of 2004, Alaska and Hawaii are the only two states in the Union for which you can have an international carrier bringing cargo in or out of the United States through Alaska. And without being considered to have broken their international journey, they can land in Anchorage, and instead of just having to refuel and keep going, like most of them are currently doing, they can land in Anchorage or Fairbanks, they can offload their cargo onto another carrier, they can break their cargo up into different parts, they can transfer it to a domestic carrier, they can do all sorts of things without being considered to have broken their international flight pattern. This is a huge advantage for carriers who might want to bring products into the U.S. from Asia in particular, the Asian markets. And we only currently have, of all the carriers who are bringing cargo in and out of Alaska right now, only two carriers are currently taking advantage of this opportunity. And as we know, if you do more than stop and go, if you just refuel, that brings a certain amount of jobs and a certain amount of economic opportunity into Alaska. But if they have to have operations here on the ground and they're using us as a transfer center and they're actually using this provision to its full advantage, that means more operations in the ground in Alaska. It means more jobs, principally in Anchorage and Fairbanks. But as we know, with the multiplier effect, maybe more avgas, maybe more from Flint Hills, and more opportunity for the railroad to bring avgas down. And this is an opportunity that we are not fully utilizing at this point, Mr. Chairman, that I want to see us take full advantage of.
So any suggestions on how to do that?
Mr. Chairman, I know that the airport is trying to do their best to get the word out, but you know they've got a lot going on their plate. And so the people in this building, we talk to our colleagues in other states. We talk, when I'm traveling, sometimes I'm talking to people from UPS. I'm talking to people from a variety of different areas. And I've been doing what I can to spread the word. I talk to people from some of these other companies, and they have no idea what I'm talking about. So I think anything we can do to help spread the word as we're doing our own travels and our own outreach would be very beneficial.
Maybe what we can do is, as a guest to our committee, maybe the committee can write a letter to the appropriate entities, and you can be one of the signatures on there, and we'll see if they can tell us why they can't figure this out.
So. Great, Mr. Chairman. I would be very, very appreciative of that.
All right. Any questions for our guest speaker?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What about who are the two carriers? Do you know who the two carriers are?
You know, I don't, through the chair, I don't actually know who the two carriers are right now who are taking advantage of it, but I can get that information for you.
Okay, that's all.
Yeah.
FedEx, UPS, maybe?
I'm not sure that they are the ones, Mr. Chairman, but I will get that information, get it back to the committee.
Okay. And, Mr. Chair, real quick, we had a report on this at one time last year, and it was through the Anchorage International Airport, and one of the things they talked about, Delta was one of them. If I remember correctly, which I thought was really odd, but they do passenger service, but they also, because their flights don't make it all the way in Northwest was another one, that they somehow match up and transfer cargo from one to the other because one has more domestic flights, one has international flights, so they were able to bring stuff over, transfer it, and then let it dissipate from there with another airline. So, but I thought it was odd that it was passenger airlines that were taking advantage of it.
Debbie, please note for the record that the representative from Anchorage is very demonstrative in his speaking.
Airplanes.
All right. If there's no other questions for Representative Holmes, good morning. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Ted, Mark, you could please come to the mic and reintroduce yourself for the record, and we'll continue with paraphrasing the answers to the questions that I submitted.
For the record, Ted Leonard with the Executive Director of ADA.
Mark Davis with ADA Economic Development Office. So we're back on now to question three of the answers, which deals with procurement. Essentially, we seek to be treated like the other public corporations, like Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. The idea is to provide flexibility for the board and the executive director to make more use of any quick business opportunities that may arise. The current process is slow. For example, with regards to your procurement of a piece of equipment for Ketchikan Shipyard, which ADA participates with, it took 2 years through the procurement process, which is not commercially reasonable. And one reason for that, according to our procurement staff, is that our projects generally are not related to development projects for which the Department of Transportation has standard contract terms. That is, they don't normally buy parts for dry docks. So if we go through their system, we're buying stuff very different from what they use to procure, and that causes some problems and causes people to have to redo things, and it gets to be very slow. So what we seek is essentially what the other public corporations have, and that essentially was our answer to number three. It also to emphasize that we had a question from Representative about other procurement-related statutes, and we checked so that this proposed change does not change the application of, for example, the Little Davis-Bacon Act to procurement, nor does it change the business and professional licensing requirements, which we are still in the bill, expressed through Title 36.
So just for the Debbie, just for the record, Representative Gardner, Representative Munoz just now joined us, and a few minutes ago, Representative Peggy Wilson joined us. And maybe because our colleague here has to attend another meeting, maybe we could just take a break here and have her ask her questions at this time. So please go ahead, Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really appreciate that because I've got a finance subcommittee meeting. So I read the questions over and found it very interesting, and it changed my mind about some things, so I was pleased to have this. One of my questions are, do you report every year back to the legislature all the projects that you've taken on during the year so that we know what's happening?
Through the chair to Representative Wilson, we report on our we present an annual report every year to the legislature that states what our projects are, gives our financial information and other information. In that report, we try to list all the projects that we've invested in. I don't think by statute it states that, but we do that through our annual report, and that annual report has to be to the legislature by the first part of January.
Okay. And is it I know a lot of groups are now saying it's online, you can go to it, or do we get a real...
You get a... Oh, excuse me. Through the chair to Representative Wilson, we send copies to everyone.
Okay.
Well, to the legislature, and I assume they disseminate them to the offices.
Oh, okay.
And I could, after this meeting, walk over to Commerce and get a couple copies and bring them to your office.
Okay, and I only need one, but and so I think it I maybe I've gotten them, but I don't think I have, but I might have. The other question is the analysis that you commissioned or contracted out to get. Can we as legislators get that analysis, the results from it, so that we could look at it for overall because it sounds to me like it had really good information that we might be able to use as legislators as we think about things that we can do.
Representative Wilson, through the chair, this is Mr. Davis for the record. Yeah, we will certainly, if this would pass, we would certainly track the effect of what it's done, on how we were able to put deals together. The intent here is to move more quickly, but also to keep the normal procurement requirements like Davis-Bacon and other things in place.
Okay. One more question.
Sure, go ahead.
If you go ahead with your LLC, does that also give you one step back from us, or would you still be doing your report that would include that so that we would kind of have an idea of what's happening?
Through the chair to Representative Wilson, an LLC would still be, ADA's portion of it would still be reported by ADA in its financials, and it would be part of our reports to the legislature.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Mark, if you could return to where we interrupted you and continue on.
Chairman, thank you. Just for the record, just to note, the contract after award bid statute that would still apply, which is the requirement that the business that bids have some local presence, is AS 36-3170. So essentially, the procurement change is for more flexibility, but to still have all the requirements of Alaska businesses, Davis-Bacon, and all the other requirements. Also, there'd be a public process through regulation. Question number four was with regard to the change in ADA's board, and that changed the composition from three government officials and two public members to two commissioners, revenue and commerce, joined by now five public members. We did not seek that change, however, it was one that we did welcome. It seems to be working well, and we're in the process of adding new board members. So far, though, the interaction with the board has been positive, and there is there should be a broader range of both geographic and business expertise on the board as a result. Question five was with regard to what are the states we looked to when we drafted HB 119, and as you noted, we looked at New Jersey. We looked at the Wyoming Business Council, which is a public-private group that operates similarly to the Department of Commerce in Wyoming. We looked at the Vermont Economic Development Authority, which is quite similar to ADA. And then we also looked at the West Virginia Economic Development Authority, whose statutes track ADA pretty closely. Looking at that, we noted that over time, our sister states have changed what they can do so they can respond to changes in the economy. For example, most of them have biochemical capabilities in that industry. We don't mention that. Most of them have communications. Obviously, when ADA was formed in 1967, communications was pretty much telephone lines. Now it's much more than that. So looking at that, we decided that our current list of projects was too delimited, and that we sought to expand it. We gave a precise example from the Ohio Port Authority statutes. Now, that's a little bit of a different system. That's where Ohio sets up local port authorities that actually carry out the work of ADA on a local basis, but they're still development authorities. They are able to work on, and I quote, housing, recreation, education, government operations, culture, or research within the jurisdiction of port authority, in quotation. So you can see that's a fairly broad definition that lets them engage in a wide variety of things that lead to economic development. But like ADA, those authorities are supposed to make a return on what they put in, and that's always a constraint on what we're doing. These are economic development projects, and they're not projects that are just aimed to build a public good. So our survey also showed that new technologies is being supported by mass development, by Wyoming, by North Dakota. So we also wanted to put in research and development in HB 119 so that if those opportunities arise, ADA can provide financing, and then if the whole bill passes, we can provide partial financing for a new idea through an LLC mechanism. Currently, we are working on trying to develop new technology in the fishing industry, and the kind of structures that are in this bill would be conducive to that project. Do you have any? That goes through all five questions. I'd be happy to answer any members' questions.
Okay, and then during the once it leaves the committee, you're welcome to use this document in your presentations for future, or for other committee hearings. Representative Tuck, you wish to speak, and then Representative Gardner.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And you know, I know what the, you know, I know what a sole proprietor is, partnerships, S corp, C corp. Now we have this new one. I haven't got a chance to research it that much. A limited liability corporation. But when ADA goes in and invests with another company, and is now a partner rather than a sole proprietor, with the limited liability corporation, does that put ADA more at risk? Is it just the assets that's combined, grouped together with that limited liability, or does it extend through assets beyond that company into the individual shareholder, company shareholders?
Representative Tuck, the chair, this is Mr. Davis for the record for ADA. That's an excellent question. A limited liability corporations were authorized in Alaska in 1997, so they're relatively new. They have been used in other states, though, for some time. Essentially, they act as if they're a partnership, but they limit the liability of each partner to the assets they put into the LLC. The difference with a traditional partnership is that all the partners are liable for all the assets of the partnership. And we do have limited liability partnerships, the LLP, in Alaska, but that's a statute that is not used much because it's somewhat awkward to work with. But an LLC actually does act like a partnership, even to the extent that it would file a K-1 partnership return if it so elects to the IRS. What it does is it permits the assets that ADA might put into an LLC to be its only liability, usually for the activities of that business operation. So if the operation should fail, then you'd write off that portion and no more. It would also cover for most liability unless it was gross negligence. So that, in that sense, it actually lets people join together for a discrete project and then move on to other projects. And also an advantage to an LLC is it can be managed by a managing partner elected by the members. And in a corporation, you have to have shareholder votes, board meetings, and a series of other corporate governance mechanisms, which are quite can be cumbersome and really inappropriate for an investment-type vehicle. So if you look at investment vehicles throughout this state, whether they're in real estate or other business ventures, you'll see more and more LLCs being filed. One thing I noted when I was the director of business professional licensing and corporations was the growth in the LLC numbers versus corporations in our state. So this statute is designed to let ADA kind of modernize and join the trend.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you. My question is actually follow on from that. So with this limited liability and only the assets of the LLC at risk, would it not encourage ADA to be involved in projects that are risky and uneconomic without ADA's participation, secondly? And then what kind of incentive is there for ADA to be maintain its prudent and cautious approach to participation in investment?
For the record, to Representative Gardner, I think one of the things is that, again, LLC is an investment mechanism, as Mr. Davis said, on governance. But for ADA, its mission is to provide economic development and investment. If we get, that does not mean through this type of investment that we would be looking at riskier investments. ADA must, through its statute, still go through the process to show that the investment will make a return that will pay back ADA's any debt that it has in the investment, and also pay a rate of return so that ADA can still move forward. If we have bad investments or go into risky investments that don't look like they would pay ADA back, then we won't have resources to move forward with other investments. Plus then the public pressure also and the legislative pressure, if we're having bad investments, then our dividend will go down. It'll be in the public where that we've had a bad investment and lost our investment. So those public processes are still there to protect the legislature, the ADA. And then again, as Representative Heron has questioned, in our new board governance, we have private sector people that are in control of the board, and they're going to ensure that ADA is making investments that will be good for the organization and good for the state.
Thank you. I have other questions, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Thank you. With the expanded powers, and one of the examples you gave is the fuel storage facility that under current powers you're not allowed to do, and you would be under the passage of this bill. Could that include things like roads, and could it bypass some of the public process? I think we talked about a road to a private facility on private land, but is there a public process for that? And particularly in unorganized areas, I mean, how would the public weigh in and participate in the decision making about that?
Through the chair to Representative Gardner, even with the broadened powers, that we still would have to go through our normal procedures. In an unorganized area or where we're going to invest more than or issue more than $6 million of bonds, we have to go through a public hearing process in those unorganized areas. And if it's an unorganized area, actually, and I'm hoping I'm not misspeaking, but we haven't had to do it very often, but you actually have to, the governor has to set up a task force or a committee to take public hearing and then report it back to our board. So there are several processes that you have to go through before ADA can invest in a project in an unorganized area or any area. And most of that is if we're going to bond over $6 million, we have to go through that process. And also, I believe, if we're doing certain contracts, I'd have to get back on that.
Okay, and if I might, Mr. Chair, so if you hold these public hearings and have the task force and the public objects, does that have the strength to stop the process, or can ADA go ahead?
To the chair, to Representative Gardner, from my understanding, that information goes back to the board, and I would have to verify, but I do believe if the board wanted to, which I would not believe they would, that they could go ahead with the process. But I will check with my assistant AG. But I know the process is there for to get the public information to the board. And I believe our assistant AG is on the line, and I could have him answer that question.
Yes, Brian Borquist is out of Anchorage, is available for questions on this bill as well as House Bill 120. Brian, did you hear the question?
Yes. For the record, I am Brian Bjorkquist. I'm a senior assistant attorney general for the state of Alaska. And the answer to the question is it depends upon whether bonds would be issued or not. If there were bonds in excess of $6 million, then there would have to be local government governing body approval for the project, consent for the project, including the location of the project. If there was not bond financing, and in an unorganized borough, there would still be a regional resource advisory council established, but they wouldn't have approval process or a necessary approval, but they would have to be consulted for the project and in particular before the contracts are entered for the project.
Thank you.
Okay.
And, Chair, if I could just add one thing to that, is that if it was, for example, like a road, I can assure the council that I would, or the committee, that we would probably have to bond for something like that due to the fact that the internal capacity on a road is would not be there.
Okay.
One last question.
Please, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So with the adoption of House Bill 119, wouldn't the legislature be giving up its approval authority for multi-million dollar projects but below $10 million?
To the Chair, to Representative Gardner, right now for the specific powers that we do have, we can invest in under $10 million right now. So
Okay. If
you're saying that, could that broaden the number of projects we do under $10 million? The answer could be yes, but again, what I would want to emphasize to the committee is that right now we're asking for a tool, is the way I look at it. And if the mission for us is to expand and diversify the economy. We're asking for the tools that we believe that we need. Again, I believe that there's processes through the annual report, through the change by the legislature of the composition of the board that provides the safeguards for us. But again, you know, yes, it would expand the number of projects we have, but we also have our internal capacity. Again, for any large project, we would have to go back to bond, we believe. And so that would mean anything we bonded over $10 million would go to the legislature. But in the end, yes, we can invest in projects. Even, I guess I would say that on the limit of $10 million, that the limit of $10 million is if we bond. We can invest in projects internally if we have the internal capacity and believe that it's a good project for over that amount. Mm-hmm. It's only when we go back for bonding that we have to.
Okay. Seeing no other questions, thank you, Ted. Thank you, Mark. Is there anyone else in the room? There's no one else online to testify on this bill. Is there anyone else want to testify on this legislation? Seeing none, the public hearing is closed. Now the bill is in front of the committee. And as you remember, at the last committee, Vice Chair Olson offered up an amendment. I objected for a discussion, maybe just for the committee. Could you explain the amendment, sir? Representative Olson?
Amendment number one would permit ADA to create a subsidiary corporations, which would complement the provision already in House Bill 119 permitting the agency to form an LLC as a means of owning and operating a development. The amendment is based on language which already permits Alaska Housing Finance Corporation to form subsidiary corporations. This amendment would give ADA the same powers as Alaska Housing Finance Corporation.
Any committee questions on the proposed amendment? Ted, you can just nod your head, and I'll tell the recording secretary of your response. Do you support the amendment?
Yes, sir.
Debbie, it's in the affirmative that the ADA supports the amendment. Representative Gardner.
I'm just curious, has ADA requested the amendment?
Representative Olson?
To the best of my knowledge.
Okay.
I assume that's why they're supporting it. But
well, they might support something somebody else requested. Or thought of.
Okay. We have the amendments in front of us. I lift my objection. Is there any objection to a further objection? Representative Gardner.
Sure, if I might have just a minute. It's the first time I've seen it. I'd just like to read all the way through it.
Sure, no problem. While we're standing by, is there any other questions on any other part of the bill? Seeing none.
Questions?
Representative Munoz.
Thank you, for Mr. Leonard.
Please, Ted.
I have a question about a subsidiary corporation. Several years ago, Congress authorized $384 million for Southeast Interties, but it required a 20% match by the state of Alaska. I know this is projection, just thinking ahead, but could a subsidiary corporation help to manage federal receipts and try to couple the state match and other sources of revenue that could make that project viable?
This is Ted Leonard. Through the chair to represent Moonsville. I would believe so. Again, we do have our senior AG on the line that could probably give a better legal interpretation of that. But ADA does have the powers to invest in interties right now, and that I would think through a subsidiary that you could do that. And if the chair would like to ask if the attorney...
Brian, are you online, and did you hear the question?
Yes, and for the record, I'm Brian Bjorkquist, Senior Assistant Attorney General for the State of Alaska, and the answer is yes, a subsidiary could be used for that type of a project.
Thank you.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you. and I'm sorry if I'm a little bit obtuse here, but I'm new on resources and trying to understand. What is the effective difference between the ability to form an LLC under House Bill 119 and the amendment offering an ability to form a subsidiary corporation? Would that also be an LLC?
Representative Gardner, I appreciate the promotion to resources chair, but this is EDT.
Oh, so. Sorry, EDT. same comment. We'll just put it on EDT.
To the chair, to Representative Gardner, I defer to
yes.
Mark Davis or Brian Bjorkvist on this.
Representative Gardner, to the chair, this is Mr. Davis for ADA. A subsidiary corporation can be different from an LLC. A subsidiary would be usually wholly owned by ADA. Whereas an LLC, ADA might be in a partnership, so that a subsidiary corporation can be formed so that a project can be gotten going and spun off, for example, if we don't wish to retain it, or as Representative Munoz's example, as Mr. Bjorkvist testified to, could be used to set up a mechanism to accept funds from another source and set up a corporation to effectuate a particular policy, which might be an intertie system.
For the record, this is Ted Leonard. To Representative Gardner, again, also, I think you have more broader powers on this, under subsidiaries. For example, the authority can allow or give powers that it has to the subsidiary to issue bonds, incur debts, etc. So if you look at lines 12 through 15, it's stating that it can transfer its powers to that authority while at the same time shielding itself from the debts, the liabilities, and the obligations of that subsidiary.
If I could clarify, this is Mr. Davis, the director, Mr. Gardner, clarify a little bit. What that would mean is that an LLC would be an investment mechanism with a partner, usually. So we're putting together a consortium to invest. The subsidiary does have the powers of ADA. So in the Intertie example, ADA could set up a subsidiary to support that particular project, take in available federal funds, and then issue the necessary residual bonding to provide for the rest of the financing, which would not be done through an LLC mechanism.
Representative Gardner, and then Representative Thompson.
Thank you. So if ADA created a subsidiary and the subsidiary got federal funding and went off on doing whatever their project was, would ADA have any authority over the decisions made by the subsidiary, or would they be a rogue subsidiary, possibly?
Mr. Davis, for the record, they would not be. The subsidiary corporation is controlled by the parent corporation.
Okay.
The parent corporation can appoint the board of the subsidiary. And normally, all activities of the subsidiary must be approved through the board. So the board governance process, which is very important data, for example, with your question before about public processes, the board meetings are public, and the public can come and does come to comment on a particular project. So they would be in control.
Thank you.
Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Gardner kind of asked my question. The subsidiary corporation would still be subject to the same rules, regulations, and restrictions as the parent company?
Representative Thompson, Chair, this is Mr. Davis, for record, you are correct.
Okay. Final questions? Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With the limited liability corporation we were able to do, and now with the subsidiary being able to get those federal funds and being able to transfer those assets if you wanted to, I forgot what term you used, but roll them over into somebody else, into something else. What is it now that you can't do that would require the subsidiary? I mean, you can't. Is it impossible to collect federal monies now for particular projects, or is it really incurring recurring ability to be able to roll the funds is what you're looking to do, or roll the assets, I'm sorry.
Representative Tuck, to the chair, this is Mr. Davis for the record. No, you're quite correct. It's a good question. ADA already has the powers to accept federal monies and federal grants under 44-88-10 as general powers. However, it can't place them in a subsidiary, and it can't give the subsidiary bonding authority. And what you can do when you have a separate subsidiary is set up an entity just to accomplish a particular project. You might have bond indentures that which are the restrictions on the bonds, that reflect that. And so you, what, as Mr. Lenders testified, what we're trying to do is give us some more investment tools that Alaska Housing, for example, already has, and able to effectuate things more quickly in a more standard commercial manner, let's put it that way, than it currently exists.
Okay. The amendments before us, are, and I've lifted my objection. Is there any objection to adopting the amendment? Seeing none, we have the full bill back in front of us. No one is wishes to testify. What is the wishes of the committee here?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'd move that we move House Bill 119 as amended with attached fiscal notes onto the next committee.
Any objection? So ordered. Okay. And get the report coming around for signature. So, Brian, you're still available for 120 as well. And do we have our test? Do we have Hugh Short online as well? Okay. You and I'll be calling on you here briefly to make comment.
Okay.
Let's see. Okay. Mr. Leonard, name and affiliation for the record and begin your presentation on 120.
Thank you, Chair. For the record, my name's Ted Leonard. I'm the Executive Director of ADA.
And for the record, Mr. Chairman, my name is Mark Davis. I'm with ADA, an Economic Development Officer.
Yes, and staff is passing around questions that I've written up, and we'll give you a copy as well. But please begin your presentation.
Thank you, Chair. Again, as we discussed with House Bill 119, it has been in the process over the last 2 years looking at how we can increase the number of tools that we have in our toolbox to promote economic development in the state and also to diversify Alaska's economy. And one of the other important aspects is how do we get more investment into rural areas? And as we've been going to conferences and looking and discussing issues with other development agencies and consultants, one of the main programs that floated to the top that ADA is not participating in is with a federal program called the New Markets Task Credit Program. This is a program where the federal government is trying to incentivize investments into certain areas. And it's a program that has worked well in other areas that we've seen. It's a program that is working in Alaska currently through a community development entity and a big co named Alaska Growth Company. And Mr. Hugh Short is the executive director and will be discussing the program. And to tell you the truth, he's much more of an expert than I am on this program, so he would have some good information. Again, it's just another tool that we're looking at. We believe it will help for ADA to do more investments in areas of census tracts with low income, smaller population areas. And it does provide one of the things that we've seen a problem with. If the committee remembers last year, ADA was working on, and we had a bill approved that allowed us to work on recovery zone facility bonds. And what these bonds were a type of bond that businesses could utilize to get actual tax-exempt financing. And what we found out is that they could be utilized more often into urban areas. For example, most of our bonds were issued in Fairbanks and Anchorage, and that a lot of times in projects in the rural areas, they just did not have the cash flows up front in starting a new project or investing in a project to have a bank that would be willing to move forward to the system. So the program really did not work very well in, for example, the Bethel area or some of the other rural areas. So this is a program we believe that would work to help give tax credits, lower the cost of debt, and actually give what ADA calls patience capital, give the project time to get its legs under it over a seven-year period, and then be able to move forward under a conventional financing source. And I would defer to Mark Davis on how the program works, because he's much more of an expert on it than I am.
Mr. Chairman, this is Mr. Davis for the record. Essentially, looking at your question too, speed things along. The first question on the bill is whether we would require submission of economic benefit analysis prepared by a person acceptable to the authority. When would we do that? As part of the analysis of a new markets tax credit, we want to make sure the project could actually pay for itself, even though it's got, as Mr. Linder said, patient capital. So we would still want to make sure that that would work, so we would probably do that as a matter of due diligence. With respect to question two, have we surveyed the areas that would or might be eligible to use this program? The answer is yes, we have. We have a business development officer, Mike Katze, and he's been doing that work. And I think Mr. Short could also provide testimony on that. But basically, it's also a little complicated, because even though what's in the bill is accurate, the IRS also has said in an amendment in 2004 that this program can also be used for targeted populations that may be treated as low-income communities, and targeted populations can include, for example, an Indian tribe or Native Americans. Additionally, census areas with less than 2,000 people in the census tract can qualify. So, as with any IRS program, I have a demonstrative exhibit for you. This is IRS publication LMSB04-05110-016 of May 2010, which is a clarification of the program, which is 51 pages long. So this is typical of the federal government at work. I used to be a federal attorney. So the answer is yes, we are looking at it. We are trying to do a survey. Is it exhaustive? Obviously not. And it's, they're always in flux. The third issue is
Mr. Davis, since you've declared what one of your career tracks are, is that clarification well written?
It is fairly well written. I used to do tax work for the U.S. Department of Justice, and I think I tried 20 or 35 federal tax cases, so I have some experience doing federal tax work.
It's clear to you. Representative Tech, you have a question.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And when you said the Indian Native tribes for targeted populations, and then also a population less 2,000, is it and or? Or is
and
it
has, or.
And or, okay, and thank or. You.
Very good question.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair. Davis, for the record.
Okay.
Third question asked is, mentions only New Jersey Estate Development Finance Authority is making leveraged loans. That is accurate. We have surveyed other states, as we did for HB 119. It's one of our processes to see whether what we're doing is consistent with what our sister states are doing. New Jersey does have a guarantee program. I'm unaware of any other guarantee program. The other states are operating in the middleman of this project, which is the Community Economic Development arm, which accepts the funds from the equity investors and the bank loans, kind of in the middle. In Alaska, we have Alaska Growth Capital, Mr. Short and his staff, available to do that. So we didn't think ADA should be a Community Economic Development Authority. Didn't need to be, but other states are, such as New York and New Mexico. What struck us is the need, and this is outlined at page 4 in your attachments, a letter from Vincent Rascheri, who's a lawyer who works on these matters, and he says that the program's not working because of the lack of loans. We have equity investors that are available, but there isn't loans. So he says that the problem is, quote, lack of available credit in general. It is exceedingly difficult at the present time for new market tax credit projects to obtain leveraged loans from private financial institutions. That's the second full paragraph of page 4 of Mr. Rascheri's letter. And so his conclusion was that guaranteeing or providing leveraged loans should help alleviate a serious bottleneck. That is, ADA is proposing that we get the program on track by ADA providing a guarantee to the banks, so they might want to do it. The problem for the banks is simply that under the IRS regulations, they have to take interest only for 7 years. and then they can't have a secured interest in the project they can't foreclose from. Now, if any of you have ever had a bank loan, a commercial bank loan, not only do they want a UCC-1 on everything you own, they also probably want a personal guarantee. So in this kind of lending, the banks have to forego that. So the thought from the people we consulted with was that a guarantee by ADA would let them still make these kinds of loans. So essentially, I hope I've gone through your three questions. And how would this program work? It provides really leveraged lending. It should reduce the cost of a project by about 20 to 25%. It should let the project pay interest only for 7 years. It should provide for refinancing at the end of 7 years of only a portion of the entire project, because the equity provision is exhausted with the tax credits. So that we have a reduction in overall cost and we have an ability to get the projects up and running. What could this be used with? Well, we've been approached already by New Markets Tax Credit Fund advisors. These are people that put these kind of deals together for their equity investors, for example, with wind farms in rural Alaska, where they can use these credits in addition to renewable energy credits. One thing the IRS circular makes very clear is you can stack any other federal credit on top of this credit. So if we can combine credits, you can do better. Many of these credits, for example, have been used to renovate old buildings in the lower 48 under the historical IRS tax credits for historical building. And we have them in Alaska. The McKay building is an example in Anchorage. But we don't have that many. We're a young state. But we can use renewable energy tax credits. So we've been approached on that, and they have been used in the Platinum processing plant, at Platinum Alaska Seafood Plant, and they've been used in Kotzebue for elderly housing. So there's a track record to use them. The program is 10 years old, and we think with this bill, ADA could probably accelerate their usage in this state without any use of general funds from the state, and hopefully with only ADA offering guarantees, for which it would collect a fee for its trouble, and hopefully the project goes forward and everything is copacetic.
For the record to the chair, one last addition to that is it would be a new tool for ADA, and ADA understands the concern of the legislature as we add new tools. So we do have a cap on this tool, that the total amount at any point in time that we could have outstanding of our portfolio would be $50 million in leverage loans and leverage guarantees.
Okay. I think what I'll ask, committee members, we'll hold questions until after we hear from Hugh Short, and then he's where he's at, and they can stay right there, and then we can ask everybody questions if we need to. It's the intent of the chair to hold this until next week, the bill, so people can absorb this. At this time, let's go to Hugh Short. Hugh, you're on an off-net site. That means you're not in Anchorage. Should we let your employers know that you and your wife are enjoying yourself as well as working hard?
Yeah, I'm sure you could do that. Through the chair, this is Hugh Short. I'm the president and CEO of Alaska Growth Capital, BIDCO. We are a state-chartered BIDCO. And actually the only BIDCO in Alaska. In addition to that, what allows Alaska Growth Capital to participate in the New Markets Tax Credit Program is that we are a CDFI, Community Development Fund Institute certified organization. That designation from the U.S. Department of Treasury allows us to compete for New Markets Tax Credits. And over the last 10 years, Alaska Growth Capital BIDCO has been able to receive $90 million in NMTCs. We're currently the only CDE in the state of Alaska, and we do work with a number of CDEs across the country. There are CDEs that are active in Alaska, and we try to coordinate and work on projects together. Alaska Growth Capital is owned by the Arctic Slope Regional Corporation, ASRC, and through the efforts of AGC, we have used public, private, and federal sources to be able to create over 2,000 jobs since our beginning.
So, Representative Gardner, you had a question?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm trying to follow the acronyms. ABIDCO, CDBs. Can we just
CDEs? Yes.
Slow down just a second.
Yeah.
So I can absorb them.
We got a few minutes, so just bear with us. So, if you could.
Let me just start at ABIDCO. The state of Alaska set up under Mark Davis's leadership back in the late 90s, the Business and Industry Development Corporation Act, the BIDCO Act. And what the BIDCO Act allowed the state of Alaska to do was to regulate and create lending companies that are not banks but are capitalized by private capital. In the case of Alaska Growth Capital, we were capitalized by ASRC, Arctic Slope Regional Corporation, and an initial loan grant from the state of Alaska for $3 million. So the BIDCO designation within the state of Alaska is very important to Alaska Growth Capital. We provide annual reports to the state of Alaska on jobs creation, and we provide, we're examined by the Division of Banking and Securities, and I believe we're the only BIDCO that has been created in the state of Alaska.
Thank you.
Okay.
I'll go back to my other acronym, CDFI, Community Development Finance Institutions. The U.S. Department of Treasury has created the CDFI under the Clinton administration to encourage investment into low-income communities, whether they're rural or urban. That was created in the mid-90s, and the CDFI is a designation that allows you to access federal programs from the U.S. Department of Treasury. Those programs include the New Markets Tax Credit Program, as well as federal grants for lending and other opportunities as the U.S. Department of Treasury creates those.
Thank you.
Thank you. Please go ahead with your testimony.
Okay. As Mark and Ted have indicated, Alaska Growth Capital has been active with regard to new markets tax credits, and we believe that HB 120 would be a very large incentive for equity investors across the country to invest in good projects in Alaska. As Mark indicated, the biggest hurdle that we have with regard to putting projects together is that banks that lend to the new markets tax credit structures have to forbear for 7 years, which means that if for some reason the borrower cannot make debt service, the bank will have to hold off for 7 years before they can access their assets that they have put a lien on. In today's banking regulatory atmosphere, there is a lot of uncertainty with different bills in front of Congress. Many banks are very, very cautious and conservative. And the fact that in order to use traditional debt in a new market tax credit structure requires forbearance pretty much gets kills any interest from any lending institution. The other two issues that Mark mentioned, interest-only payments for 7 years as well as an indirect lien on the assets, usually can be overcome. But the fact is, the biggest hindrance is the forbearance for 7 years. It's much like if you had a house and a mortgage, and in year two, you decided you were going to quit paying your mortgage, but you could live in the house for the next 5 years, and the bank couldn't take the house from you. It would be much of the similar to that situation. So that's really the big hurdle for being able to deploy the tax credits in Alaska. This piece of legislation would allow ADA to make prudent decisions, prudent investment decisions with regard to projects that can service their debt and can attract a bank to lend to the structure. And hopefully Alaska can become one of the most successful new markets tax credit states in the union because of this piece of legislation. That would allow many projects in rural Alaska, many projects in downtown Anchorage or Mountain View or East Anchorage or downtown Fairbanks or off the road system in southeast Alaska, many distressed areas. It would allow us to add about 15% to 20% of capital to the projects that would offset the cost of doing business and allow the entrepreneur or the nonprofit build out their infrastructure and create more jobs and be more successful in the services they provide. Just a project, a couple projects mentioned included Platinum and Coastal Villages Region Fund's ability to use the New Markets Tax Credit Program to build out the Platinum Fish Plant, which has added a whole new market for salmon in Kuskokwim Bay. It's allowed a $40 million facility to be built that otherwise could not have been built, and has been a huge impact to that part of the state. At the end of 2010, Alaska Growth Capital attracted New York Community Bank to purchase about $18 million worth of tax credits for an elder care facility in Kotzebue, Alaska, which ultimately allows the facility to offset the first 3 years' losses and add a working capital reserve provided through the New Markets Tax Credit Program. There are multiple projects that we look at that we would like to be involved in that can't overcome the barrier of the leveraged lender requirements. And I feel HB 120 would be a key to being able to create many more jobs in the state of Alaska, both in the urban areas and the rural areas. Thank you.
Is there questions either for Hugh Short or for the ADA officials? Well, let's start with Representative Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to make a comment, and that is that I think this is a very good program. It's federal tax credits that we're looking at here. And so then the question would be, the risk in terms of how that affects the state in taking on, more of these programs, as you had mentioned here. And I think, when you look at it, Mr. Short had mentioned the Coastal Villages Resource Fund, sound, corporation with, I think, strong assets. And so when you're looking at those, I think, we're looking at good partnerships. When you look at rural projects and we're targeting, areas that are devastated economically, I think, to take advantage of these tax credits would be a very good thing. And so just wanted to make that comment. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do like the idea that we're able to get out to rural areas and so on and so forth, get out there and get help those communities that just don't have the cash flow to be able to take advantage of it. One of the statements that was made is 15% to 20% reduce the capital projects by 15% to 20%. Can you mind, Hugh, if you don't mind, elaborating on that, on how that will offset those costs?
Through the chair, for the record, this is Hugh Short. Yes, what the tax credits allow is for an equity investment by a tax credit investor. And for ease sake, let's call it a $10 million project. Of that $10 million project, $3.9 million or 39% of the total project cost is available in a tax credit for a tax credit investor. A question is, who would be a tax credit investor? Currently today, U.S. Bank purchases about 80% of the new market's tax credits. Wells Fargo is a large player. So is New York Community Bank. A lot of banks out there purchase these credits. You can assume that that $3.9 million in credits would probably, with today's pricing, sell for somewhere around $2.7 million. The reason the tax credit investor buys it at a discount is they actually receive anywhere between a 10 to 15% annual return over the seven-year compliance period. That leaves $2.7 million that goes into the investment. After attorneys and accountants and other fees, the remaining equity ends up into the project. Those funds are, you pay interest only for 7 years on those funds, which is often a below market interest rate. I think the last transaction I saw was somewhere around 2%. And after 7 years, in many of the leveraged structures that I've seen, whether it's Coastal Villages or Manilik or anyone else who's been able to utilize the program, can purchase the debt through the investment vehicle, and they don't have to pay back the principal. So what a project realizes in the end is, on a $10 million project, anywhere between $1.5 million to $2 million that they receive up front, and at the end of 7 years in the compliance period, can purchase that for a nominal fee, and they don't have to repay that debt. That debt is essentially forgiven. So that's why people do the new markets tax credit, is because it allows them to it allows a mutual benefits to all parties involved. The tax credit investor receives a 10 to 15% return with very little risk. And the project itself receives about a 15 to 20% return of capital that otherwise they would have had to go out and either get a grant or a bank loan to be able to access that.
Follow-up question before we adjourn?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry, this is really new to me, so I'm trying to follow as close as possible. I know that we've talked about the recovery, and this is probably a question more for our presenters here in front of us, Mr. Davis and Mr. Leonard. When we have the recovery zone bonds, that was the patient's capital is what we referred to. And the patient's capital is given opportunities for investments and for projects to take off. And so being that it's patient's capital, I understand that why we would want to give them that seven-year time frame before assets can be collected. But that also becomes a hurdle, as we heard testimony from Mr. Short, that it can be a hurdle in those new investments. Can you please, just real simple, and I'm sorry I haven't been able to follow that closely, show us how that bridges that gap, how that we're able to overcome that seven-year hurdle?
Rest in touch to the chair. This is Mr. Davis for the record for ADA. That's a good question. I mean, if Mr. Short's testimony demonstrates that there's effectively about a 15 to 20% reduction in the capital of the project. So at the end of 7 years, the project, say, in his example, owes about, you know, 8.5 or 8 million versus the full 10. And then it has to refinance that 8. The problem with this program is that, as he's testified, you need both parts to go into the project. That is, the qualified tax-driven investors, the equity investors, who are going to get the tax credits. And then you need some type of bank loan or some kind of other debt service to supply the rest of the capital, who is going to turn that remaining $8 million into a conventional loan. But you're asking that conventional lender to wait and to not foreclose. As he said, not foreclose. Like on a mortgage, not foreclose for the full period, even if you have a default. The purpose of this bill, HB 120, is to try to fill that gap to provide the banks or those other lenders with a guarantee by ADA, which has assets, to, in the event of a default, to let them take their money back in the form of the guarantee. ADA would step into the shoes of that lender, and then it could wait and then foreclose at the proper period. So it's just an idea to free it up, because right now there are no leverage, as I understand it, there are very few leveraged lenders willing to operate in Alaska.
And for the record, this is Ted Leonard, to the chair, to represent Tuck. One of the strengths of the ADA is that it does have a large net asset balance, where approximately a $1 billion, or about $1 billion in net assets. So based on our portfolio, our investments, the different projects we have, our commercial loan program, it allows us to invest in projects long term. That's one of the strengths that ADA has, is, for example, in our loan participation program, that we can go out 25 years on a loan because of the mixture of our asset base. So that's why we believe that this program is another tool that fits into our asset base and our tools, due to the fact that we have the strength that we can, as Mark said, if something did happen, we do have the ability to wait out the 7-year period, whereas a private entity has their stockholders, their bottom line this year that they're looking at, where we're looking at economic development plus a return. So we can marry those much easier to take those longer term risks that private entities sometimes don't want to take.
Well, and if I might add that again, Mr. Davis, through the chair to Representative Tuck, another issue we didn't bring up is that actually the IRS regulations, they provide that if a project does not continue for the full 7-year period, that there is a tax recapture to the qualified equity investors, which is a tax word for saying that they owe all the taxes back that they just wrote off. So equity investors only invest in projects that they believe will perform for the full 7-year period, which is why most new market tax credits projects have succeeded. The people putting their millions of dollars in to get tax credits have done a lot of work to make sure the project is going to perform.
Representative Thompson.
Let me see if I got this right. You just mentioned that you can go out 20, 25 years on a loan. But in this particular program, it's got the, on page 3, that the terms of the loan do not exceed 10 years. Is that the port that then into a conventional loan at the end of that period? I'm a little confused Mark? With that.
This is Mr. Davis.
Go ahead and cite the page and the line.
Well, this, for the record, this is Mr. Davis, Representative Thompson, through the chair. We're looking at page 3 of HB 120.
Yeah.
And it's subparagraph 4 of section proposed section 4488730 at line 21. What that is saying is that the application for the loan guarantee, the term of the loan which is being guaranteed could not exceed 7 years, but if we were going to and so some of the loans, as I understand it, through new market tax credits, can exceed the 7 years. That is, the lender may go a little bit beyond 7. So we want them to be able to conform to that commercial practice. That's all. That's all we're doing here, sir.
It's so just this has to go to 10 instead of 7.
Right.
Correct. And because we've been advised by attorneys who are working on these new market cash credits that sometimes the bank actually will like to put it slightly longer than the tax recapture period of 7 years.
Okay. You're going to have a board meeting on Monday the 14th, is that correct?
To the chair, yes.
Okay. Then the intent of it is to for the committee to debate this next week, and we'll get you that schedule. Is there questions before Representative Foster?
Well, I had a quick question in terms of getting the word out on the program. It sounds like Alaska Growth Capital has got some history with this, and I just was curious how we make sure that folks know about it if we're going to be moving forward with this, especially those out in rural Alaska. Would that fall primarily on Alaska Growth Capital or on ADA to do that?
Representative Fox, to the chair, Mr. Davis, for the record, that's an excellent question. I have some background with Alaska Growth Capital. As Mr. Short testified, I used to be the Director of Banking Securities. The first new market tax credits that Alaska Growth Capital received were when through efforts that I took under a different CEO for that company. So I would envision that we have, I think, a very effective community economic development company which is out there. On the other hand, ADA is working with other consultants, and we've already been contacted by other new market tax credit funds. These are funds that are put together. So I think we'd work with Mr. Short's group and work with our consultants. And I think actually there's a lot of interest in using the allocations available for Alaska. It's just the leverage lending is holding it up.
And to the chair, to Representative Foster, Ted Leonard, for the record. Again, as we move forward, if this was passed by the legislature, I think Mark's absolutely right that we would partner with Alaska Growth, but then we would also utilize other state agencies, the Division of Economic Development. We would work with the ARDRs. We would go out on an educational-type program. And again, Alaska Growth Capital has a very good informational process that they've worked with, but we would tie with that with all our other resources to ensure that all the information gets out to the different areas of the state.
Thank you.
Okay, one final comment is, I brought the board meeting up, is that could you request that the board consider that this committee and you work together and we can identify some project that this committee could tour in the interim to show the successes of this possible legislation, but ADA in general. And we'd probably want to go to a committee member's hometown. So if you could make that request to your board, I'd appreciate that.
Yes, sir.
Seeing nothing other, Debbie, it's 1135. We're adjourned, and we'll see you next week.